Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor, who also portrayed the character of Milt Elliott on the 1994 TV movie One More Mountain, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite Eternal Ensign Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/ The Delta Flyers.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
I know we've already talked about it.
Oh, God.
But I had to throw it out there again because I cannot get out of my head your last final words out of your mouth. Please eat me.
Well,
and I'm
you know
sorry.
What? I have to correct.
Okay, it's not right.
Because
what is
it's not? So James Morrow, one of our admirals, yeah. found a link on YouTube.
Oh goodness!
And I scrolled through
as Jimmy Morrow will do. Yes,
as he will do.
What did you find?
I scrolled and found the scene, and I don't literally say "eat me." I mean, it's implied, and I am starting to say it, and then Meredith Baxter Burney goes, "Oh no, Milt! No! I couldn't. Oh. We could never." So. It is implied, and I am dying, and I'm saying, you know,
yeah,
I can't remember the exact lines, but I don't literally say the words, please eat me.
Okay.
But that's basically what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's the subtext of what you're trying to say.
And by the way, for those that didn't hear the story, it's the Donner Party. It's cannibalism.
Well, it's cannibalism, but it's the one family that did not. That refused to be cannibals. They did not eat any human
beings.
This is
a true story. Again, yes. I want to recap the context. I did a TV movie of the week.
Yeah.
And I played a character in the Donner Party. And the Donner Party was real. It happened. Pioneers that got trapped in a winter blizzard and were starving to death. And they ended up cannibalizing the people who died as the only food. So it was a movie about that. And my character... in the scene as he's dying, offers to Meredith Baxter Burney, Miss, you can eat me. But he doesn't literally say that, but I wish I did, because that would have been a much better scene.
Yeah, it's still going to be in my head. As those are your final lines, even though it's James Morrow. You have the link to that, though, right?
It's on YouTube. I don't know how it's... The whole movie was there on YouTube. So.
What?
Oh, I know.
I'm going to watch this now. In lieu of watching this episode, I'm just going to let you do the entire recap.
It's a pioneer movie of the week. It's you know, early 90s television.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited to see this. Okay, so anything that you have done, I am excited to see.
I think it's the only time where I actually had a beard on camera.
Which is amazing.
I did have a beard
Voyager
on stage before. And in real life, I've had a beard quite often. But
Had a beard when you auditioned for Voyager for that.
I did, and they made me shave it off
at the audition. Exactly, yes, Michael Piller. Could you shave Michael Piller? Right?
Yeah, it was Michael Piller.
Yeah, Robbie, would you mind shaving that all off now?
Like, he's like, would you be okay with shaving it? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, no, I mean now. No,
now,
would you shave it right now? I was like, in the office. He goes, yeah, I got a razor in my bathroom and. So I had a full beard, literally trying to shave with a razor. Like you have to trim a beard down to at least this, what I've got now.
Yeah.
Before you start shaving with a razor.
Right.
And I went at it in his office.
With the razor.
It was so ugly. I was bleeding all over. It was cut my face up. It was painful. But it was worth it for Star Trek. I'll do anything for Star Trek.
I know. But now I'm thinking about you saying the lines that you did not say. In the voice of Tom Paris, I can just instead of
yes,
ma'am, you're like, please eat me, ma'am, please eat me. So, yes, I'm gonna go look that up and I'm gonna watch that. I'm even gonna watch Sharky's Machine all over again to see
you as the teenager on
the bus. Exactly.
Nope. I don't think I had any lines, or if I did, they're not in
the
movie.
You said you had no lines, but are you sitting next to someone else that is very noticeable, or are you like a boyfriend girlfriend situation?
Yeah, there was two teenagers. I was
okay. one of the two. Yes.
And my friend Barbara Seraldo
had
gotten cast as the girlfriend on the bus. So we had grown up together. We knew each other. So
yeah. Perfect.
It was funny.
Perfect. Yeah. I don't care if you have lines or not. And I will watch anything that you're in just because.
Chucky's Machine.
Yeah. And I only say that this because you did Masters. If you didn't do Masters of the Universe, I probably wouldn't care about what your resume said.
Anything
because
else.
Of that, I'm now interested
it's
in
like
everything.
If Masters of the Universe is on his resume, what else? Is
what
there?
Else could it be? It's a cult favorite.
Crazy stuff.
My goodness.
But nothing comes close to the Tom Paris.
Yes. The Voyager and the Tom Paris. Okay. All right. So this week's episode.
Yes.
Is called Riddles.
No.
I am.
Mm-hmm. All right. Riddles. Here we go.
Riddles. Okay. I can only Let's think of this. Two things when I think of riddles. It's going to be either the Joker from DC or there is a famous cosplayer with that nickname.
Oh, riddles. Okay.
Yes. So who is actually a friend of mine. So I, other than that, I cannot think of anything else. So let's go watch this episode. I'm very intrigued as to what this is about. So we'll be right back and stay tuned, everybody.
stay tuned. You're still you know
I know
flustered I'm by the scene where I asked Meredith Baxter Burney to
think of anything but that. Yes, I am flustered. Okay, we'll see you soon. Hey, y'all, we're back from watching Riddles.
Yes, we are. I really liked this episode.
This was a very different episode than what we're used to seeing. So,
very different. And I've got to say, I didn't remember anything about it.
I know.
I can't believe Roxanne Dawson directed.
I'm sorry.
I can't believe it.
Don't you and I, didn't we talk about this? And didn't we both say Workforce?
I thought that was her first one.
How is this possible? How would this slip our brains? The minute I saw her name, I said, no way.
Yeah.
And this is not something that they filmed after Workforce and aired at season 6 in the beginning. This is clearly her very first episode.
And she did a great job.
She did. And Workforce is her second episode, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow. That blew me away.
Yeah, blew me away too. Really surprised me.
Let's start the ball rolling with our poetry synopsis and then let's get into this discussion. Okay.
Let's do, because I love a little poetry, a little art.
Yes. Poetry is a good thing to start the day with. Okay. Always. Here we go. Tuvok is attacked. Shadow people must be found. Cake frosting is key.
Nice.
All right.
You got a lot of plot.
I got a lot in there.
I didn't get a lot of
Neelix in there because I didn't have time to put Neelix in there. So I'm hoping, I'm pretty sure you have Neelix in yours. So
I do. Okay. I have Neelix in mine. Okay. Here we go with a limerick for Riddles. Tuvok goes with Neelix on a mission away. He ends up in a coma in sick bay. Tuvok's recovery kind of stings. Tom's jazz database swings. It's not logical, but I'm craving a sundae.
All righty then. Is that you?
I'm not saying.
I already know the answer. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good job.
I've never on a mission away. It's an away mission, but I was like, oh, I want to get to sundae in here. I want to get the sundae. Oh, a mission away.
Nice.
I like it.
A mission away. I almost feel like, isn't that a line from Hamilton, something away?
A moment away.
Yeah, something like that.
No, ocean away.
An ocean away. That's what it is. Yes. Well, good job, Rabbi Yekka. Very good. And then let's begin by talking about guest stars and everything else.
So Teleplay is by Bob Doherty, Robert Doherty.
Right, and I love Robert Doherty's
Robert Doherty.
Use of his, he's just a really good Teleplay writer. I'm going to say that.
He's so good.
Yes.
And I got to admit, I didn't know Bob Doherty very well during.
Neither did I.
I didn't get to know him. And what I learned in a little research is he was the youngest staff writer on
Stop.
Board. Yeah.
What?
He was a kid. I don't know how old he was, but I'm going to guess about 23, 24. He was very young, younger than Lisa Klink was pretty young. He was the youngest staff writer on Voyager. And he ended up creating the show Elementary, the Lucy Liu, Johnny Lee Miller show that ran that for like 7 years.
There we go. He was a showrunner on that show. Then.
Yeah.
Okay. So he cut his teeth on Voyager.
Yeah.
Went on to hit the big time with Elementary. Oh my goodness.
And lots of other shows that he wrote on, but he created Elementary. So
yeah, boy, that's
anyway,
awesome.
I thought this episode, the script and story structure is exactly what I was saying last week.
Yes.
Alice, that was missing. I was like, all of these little subtle moments of character and relating to people and seeing Tuvok with different people, whether it was the captain or Chakotay or Seven or whoever.
Or all us of us, on the bridge. Actually. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. It was so beautifully structured.
Yeah.
And all the holes were filled in. And the bookends of where he started and where he ended up completely connected. It was not to jump back to last week, but it's exactly what I thought was missing in Alice, that cleaner structure that has the nuance internally. I thought he did a phenomenal job.
Yeah. And like you said, it the structure was clean. This storyline, the plot line, it flowed very
well. From beginning to end, moment when Neelix is annoying him and you see the relationship and Neelix wanting to be buddies, then we go on that ride. And at the end, even though we don't quite get to keep the prize that they had,
right,
there's a little hint of it.
It's bookended by the riddle and the answer
answer.
And it's just like, yes. I mean, you have some satisfaction after you finish watching this episode. You feel like, okay, I enjoyed this episode. It flowed well. And I'm happy that I got to the end and I feel good about it, because that awesome line from Tuvok at the very, because you're thinking he's such a hard ass. He's not really, he's back to the normal Tuvok that we know, but nah, he's changed. So it's nice.
I would say to all the fans out there, any aspiring writers, this teleplay is a masterclass in story structure. It really is.
Yeah,
it is. It's one of the best scripts, I think, in our entire.
And run. Also, we've got to give kudos to our science consultant, Andre Bormanis. He's the story. He's the pitch. He pitched the story. So he sold a story to the writers. And, you know, typically when you're the consultant, whatever show you're working on, you're not selling story ideas to the to the writers or the executive producers. Am I right?
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah.
So really, you know, good job on
really on good. And again, Roxanne did an awesome job of directing this episode.
Yeah.
There's quite a few really, pro level, shots in here, very courageous shots for first timer.
Oh yeah.
And she was prepared. She was ready by season six. She had learned how to do this and she hit a home run.
But we know her. She's always prepared. She's prepared to do anything, whether it's cooking lunch, dinner, or directing an episode. She's always on point. And I'm just shocked that you and I did not remember that this was.
I am too.
How is that possible, man? Oh,
I don't know. We didn't have a lot to do in it. So
that could be it. Let's go through all the guest stars.
Guest stars, we really only have one. It's Mark Moses, who plays Narok.
Narok.
Okay. And Mark Moses, I worked with Mark on Desperate Housewives. I directed a few of those.
Oh, what did he play on there?
I forget. It's such a soap opera.
Yeah, it's so difficult because he's got prosthetics on, so I don't remember. Yeah. I've watched a lot of Desperate Housewives with Megan episodes.
He's a great actor, Mark.
Yeah.
He's wonderful. His very first job that I could find was in 1983. He played Benny Stewart on the daytime soap opera One Life to Live.
Oh, goodness.
Okay. So he started out in New York as a theater actor and soaps. Mm-hmm. I think he went to NYU. An interesting Star Trek crossover is that he was in the miniseries very early in his career. 1985, he was in the miniseries North and South. He played Ulysses S. Grant. And that miniseries is where Jonathan Frakes and Jeannie Francis, his wife, met.
What?
Yeah. So there's a crossover. Ooh. Mark Moses is connected to the miniseries North and South with Jonathan Frakes, where he met his wife. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's a bit of trivia there. Yeah, good for you for connecting the dots. I'm impressed. Yeah. All right.
All right, so
let's start off right off the bat. Yeah, first of all, again, unique in this episode, we have a ambassador's log. We don't have Neelix giving out logs left and right, so it's kind of cool that it starts with Neelix's log, and they're inside the shuttle. And I must, the elephant in the room is here. I must talk about it right now.
Yes,
all of this stuff happened because you were not piloting the Delta Flyer.
It's my
I'm not saying it's your fault. I'm saying whenever you let other people fly the Delta Flyer, bad things happen when you're not there. Because if you were there, Neelix could have been in the back with Tuvok and, you know, all this craziness.
Well, I will say in this episode, one of my very few critiques is people are doing jobs and standing at consoles on the bridge where they shouldn't be standing.
Oh,
we'll get there.
Okay, we'll get there.
You end up in a console that's not yours. I end up in a console.
You end up my console is what it is. We did
Tuvok is flying Delta Flyer. A lot of people are manning consoles that they're
not familiar with, and sure enough,
we rarely. I can almost never remember us switching as much as this. So
yeah,
that would be one little. If there's any critique I have, it's that.
Right. That's not something that bothers me, to be perfectly honest. I like the fact that we interchange. Fair. Okay.
So yeah, we see the Delta Flyer in space. We hear Neelix say, "Ambassador's log, Stardate 53263.2. Mm-hmm. Though helpful during my negotiations on the Kasat homeworld, Commander Tuvok certainly hasn't been the most sociable of travel companions." So right away we know they're not getting along. They're not hanging out and having a blast.
No.
I love him tapping. You reveal Neelix sitting in the back console, Tuvok's flying. Ethan Phillips is tapping his fingers on the end of the console. He's so bored.
It's annoying, Neil. It's annoying Tuvok. Tuvok's
like, "Mr. Neelix." And Ethan goes, "Sorry." Sorry. I love the scene. I love all the little moments. And I gotta say, by the way.
Yeah.
We talked about the script, we talked about the direction, but none of that would have worked without Ethan Phillips and Tim Russ hitting home runs in these performances from the first scene. They're so good.
They're really good. They're really good. And I love that game, this made up game of species, starship, or anomaly.
Yeah, he suggests that game, but Tuvok is like, nope.
No way.
Not going to happen. No. Neelix says, "How about a riddle?" And he doesn't wait for a no. He says, "Okay, here's the riddle. An ensign is alone on a Class L planetoid with only a calendar, no rations. Why didn't he starve?" And Tuvok thinks about it. So he's drawn in and he goes, "Well, there's this type of planet, the L-class planetoid, would have water springs.
Possibly have
springs.
Hot water springs.
And therefore plants. And he could feast on the plants and he could survive.
For several weeks, but then Neelix is like, but not for a whole year."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Neelix's answer is he stumped him and he goes, "Well, he survived because he feasted on the dates." So Tuvok.
Kind of a dad joke.
It's a total dad joke. Tuvok does not laugh. He finds it illogical and not funny at all.
Yes.
And he decides to go in the back. And he's in the back and suddenly hears an alert. A tactical station kind of comes to life. And he calls Neelix. And Neelix is like, "Nope, not me." And he goes to sort of scan this tactical station. And suddenly a cloaked alien sort of appear.
We just see the energy beam from the alien, the cloaked alien, and that takes out his tricorder, but at the same time it fries him too, so he's like he's touching the tricorder and the tricorder gets zapped and so does he. I love the fact all that smoke that must have been added post CGI, right? The smoke that's oozing out of the tricorder.
Maybe, I don't know. Sometimes, you can add that practically.
That's practical.
Might have been.
Okay.
Yes, he down goes Tuvok. He starts convulsing. He's convulsing, and Neelix calls for help, Mayday. Mm-hmm. And, Roxanne's very first fancy shot is this pullout on like a crane. at the end of the teaser with Tuvok on the ground convulsing, and very tricky shot to do because you've got walls of that set that you've got to get around. So you've got to lots
of
planning.
How do you get around those walls? Yeah.
How do you get the camera support, whether it's a crane or a cable rig or whatever it is?
Yeah.
It takes a lot of prep and it takes time.
Yeah.
So very impressed that she started out her teaser with a little fancy shot there. It was nice. And then we come back to sickbay.
Yes. He has suffered a neuroleptic shock. Yeah. The doctor is working on him and it's frenetic because he's still convulsing.
Convulsing.
He has not stopped convulsing. It's pretty hardcore to watch this, to be honest. It's like, oh my gosh, is he going to live? Is he going to
die? And this shot, by the way, you talk about frenetic. This shot of going from the doctor over to Neelix or back to Tuvok is a really exciting handheld shot that Roxanne did here. And probably Marvin had the camera on his shoulder doing this, Marvin Rush. And it was just really well done. It captured the energy and the chaos of them trying to deal with Tuvok's injury.
Well, then Janeway's also there, of course. And she does ask Neelix whether or not the Kasat, who Neelix was negotiating with earlier, if they had anything to do with this or if they know anything, what's going on. And Neelix is like, well, yeah, it's not going to hurt to ask. So we jump to the briefing room where we meet for the first time Deputy Investigator Narok.
Narok comes in. This is Mark
Security
Moses.
Guy.
Yep. I love the makeup, by the way. I love this. I thought the makeup was really cool. And I thought Mark worked it really well. Some actors work with their makeup and are able to, work and express through it really well. Some can't. And I thought this makeup worked with Mark really well. But Narok, Mark Moses, he tells Janeway that he believes Tuvok was attacked by the Beneth.
Yeah. And what's interesting is he does say that Janeway is lucky that he was assigned this, more than assigned. He had to bribe his superior to be assigned.
I love this. Yes.
Assigned this because this is mythical. The Beneth to the Kasat are like, the analogy is Bigfoot
or ghosts.
Bigfoot to us.
Or Bigfoot.
Bigfoot to us is what I'm going to say, right? It's just so few sightings. I think the number was 12. In the history of the Kasat.
He says this would be the 13th time.
Yeah, that there's a, yeah, but he definitely believes in this myth.
And he bribed his boss, by the way, with two bottles of Kasatian ale, he says, which I thought was funny.
It is funny.
I would like to try the Kasatian.
I know you would not. You would like to
or
try
Kasatian, that. I guess.
Kasatian ale.
Kasat.
Yeah.
Yes. But he hopes that maybe they can work together and try to prove this theory, basically prove that Bigfoot is real, because everyone who's been attacked, the other 12 victims have not survived.
And the other 12 victims have all been ships that were foreign to the sector.
Yeah.
They were not local ships. So he believes that they're basically trying to see, basically trying to flesh out what they're dealing with, because they're such a private species that they want to make sure that they can assess the threat level of every new ship that comes into their sector. And whenever someone almost catches them, then they have to sort of, incapacitate them to the point that they cannot tell their superiors or anybody else what happened.
Yeah. So they do discuss how Tuvok's tricorder found this cloaking frequency, but the tricorder was destroyed. And so they don't have the data.
Right.
So he's like, well, let me try to, talk to Tuvok. Let's try to find out what this cloaking frequency is. Maybe Tuvok knows, and that we can prove that that Bigfoot exists, that these ghosts exist. So we go to sick bay and the doctor's talking about Tuvok's brain. There's a shot of the monitor where we see Tuvok's brain. I've never seen a Vulcan brain before, but it looks like three brains. It looks like a baby brain and then another brain on the outside and then like his cranium. I think even the doctor says at some point something like maybe another scene. He says it's an enigma wrapped in a... I think I made the note later, but...
Yeah.
But Vulcan brains are like three brains.
But when you made that description, all I could think of was that little nursery song, baby brain, do 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 do, baby brain, instead of baby shark. So baby brain, do 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 do.
Okay, so I think in this scene, actually, I was kind of spacing out, zoning out, because I was trying to remember. This is the scene where the doctor just says, Vulcan brains are more resilient than most species. Yes. Later, we see an insert of the three brains.
Okay.
And then I was like, oh, there's a... So anyway, his brain is not dead. No. One of the 13 attacks that Narok was talking about. And that's why Tuvok's not dead, because of his Vulcan brain has been able to survive this. Neelix wants to help.
And... Yeah, Neelix is still there. Everybody's kind of like taking off, and Neelix is standing there staring at Tuvok because he feels horrible and he wants
feels
to
horrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the doctor's like, well, he feels, the doctor senses Neelix is really upset. He's very emotional about this. The doctor says, yeah, maybe you could hang out and, you know, maybe some stimuli might help.
Like aromas, touch, voices, things like that. So Neelix is like, huh, all right. So if I stay here and I try to talk to Tuvok, I might be able to provoke some sort of response. And again, a funny line from the doctor, well, if anyone can provoke Tuvok, Mr. Neelix, it's you. Yes. And again, the doctor is really, he's not as abrasive in this episode as he normally is, which I really enjoyed that.
This episode has a ton of heart from everybody.
So much heart. And we have a little bit of a time cut.
We see Neelix coming down the hall with a cart of Tuvok's possessions.
He has everything.
Books, flowers. Tuvok. He's got some kind of stringed instrument. He's got everything. And he turns the corner into sick bay, and we reveal that he's already brought a ton of stuff in there.
Yeah, there's already
a Vulcan flag in there. There's flowers everywhere. He brought the game Kalto.
The Kalto game is there.
He also brought a book. It's a Vulcan drama. Yeah. So I guess this is the script, like Shakespeare. It's right. The Vulcan drama Clash of the Fire Planes. And he says, I will be performing all the roles myself, which I loved. I really wanted to hear Neelix performing the Vulcan drama Clash on the Fire Planes.
Was that here? Is that in?
He never does it, but he says he's going to perform all the roles.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he turns on some Vulcan music, and it's like this crazy chanting.
Yeah, the chants of the monks of Tepanit is what he plays. And
it's loud and it's really annoying. And we cut to the doctor in his office, like his head pops up. He's like, he comes out, what is that dreadful noise? Turn it off. And Neelix turns off the music. And talks to the doctor for a second, then the doctor goes back to work, and the camera pans over again. Roxanne Dawson did a great reveal of Tuvok is suddenly already sitting up.
He's sitting up on the bio bed, and he's conscious.
But he's not speaking, and Neelix calls for the doctor. Doc rushes in, and the doctor tries to talk to him, but he tries to scan him,
and that's what scares him. He's just like, what the? Yeah. So it's we know immediately he's not himself at this point. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so Neelix calms him down, and Neelix scans him, right? Didn't Neelix scan him at the end?
Yeah. Well, no, Neelix calms him down, and he goes, okay, now you can go ahead. And so
that's what it is. Yeah. Neelix calms him down, and then the doctor. Yeah.
Neelix demonstrates by scanning himself, and then he hands it off to the doctor.
Very sweet.
Clearly,
like we see Tuvok is alive, but he's almost like an infant, like very, very innocent and naive and, totally different than the Tuvok we've ever seen before. Tim did a great job.
Yeah.
We go to the Delta Flyer next, and Narok is using his scanner. He set up some of his equipment. He shows Janeway what this thing does.
Yeah.
And it picks up some kind of sound. And I love his line, that's the sound of history being made.
Yeah.
And she says, please, Mr. Narok, less poetry, more facts. She's like, usually she's very dramatic, but in this case, he's the dramatic one. She's like, calm down. Just give me the science.
So the science is basically the sound that you're hearing is the presence of these viridium isotopes.
And is it viridium or beridium? I thought it was beridium.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's beridium isotopes. And then the residual particles from from Beneth's cloaking field is basically what this is. So,
yeah, Seven explains this is the residual particles. They're still active in here. Okay, so Narok now has a photolytic converter that can illuminate them, almost like an infrared, you know, laser camera or something.
Yeah.
And he turns this thing on, and he can illuminate the residual particles of the Beneth. And we see this sort of abstract outline. And this is the moment I was like, oh, this is like Ghost Hunter tools. Like when you've watched those shows,
yes, with Ghost Hunter, very much like so.
The sound things, and the, you know, and the infrared cameras and heat sensors. It's like, that's what he's doing.
Janeway even asked him earlier, she says, have you detected these isotopes before? And he's like, yeah, but only after they've decayed, because usually by the time he gets there, it's been 70 hours since the last time, you know, that's the soonest he's gotten to anything where he's been able to detect anything. And the image is very faint. So this is a, this is a very good fresh one, but
it's
one.
Still abstract. So Steven says she's going to adjust the internal sensors. He's nervous that it could ruin everything.
Narok starts to freak out. He really does. He's like, you're going to lose the whole image. And he, of course, Seven's like, get Seven's to the side.
Yes. She adjusts the internal sensors. Mm-hmm. And they hit it again, and now it's a much more vivid image of this alien, and it has tentacles, which I thought this was cool. I thought the look of
it, it is cool,
very cool.
I also think it would have been funny if Narok started freaking out, and Seven just turned to him and said, "Don't make me assimilate you," and continued like that. I'm sorry, that's just random.
But basically, we go out of this scene with Janeway saying, "Maybe we can adapt this technology so that Voyager's sensors can reveal the ships out in space. So if we can, it'll be the same kind of cloaking. We can at least reveal them, but they still need this cloaking.
That cloaking frequency, which Tuvok discovered, but his tricorder is fried.
Exactly. We go to sickbay next. This is the Vulcan.
The Vulcan brain. Yeah. Because I was a little confused. I'm like, wait a minute. What? When did he show that?
This is the Vulcan brain image that he talked about. They're more resilient than others. Now we see it. And the doctor describes it as a puzzle wrapped inside an enigma housed in a cranium.
Yeah.
And I love this insert. I was like, how many brains do Vulcans have? It's just brain after brain after brain. It's like a Russian nesting doll, you know? They're all inside each other.
I love it. I love it.
But that's pretty cool. I'd never knew that about Vulcans. And the doctor says in the scene that Tuvok's brains, because they're so resilient, his three brains or whatever, they are rewiring themselves, that it's actually healing itself, but very slowly.
Yeah.
And he says, I don't know if it's just his anatomy. I don't know if it's what I'm doing. Maybe it's even what Neelix is doing. So there's some encouragement there. You know, maybe it's Neelix.
I think it was Neelix.
And they look over, and Tuvok is studying flowers, all the flowers that Neelix brought in for smell. And he's got them up close to his face, like a little kid or an animal almost. Like,
He's very much like an infant, just discovering everything for the first time.
Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to eat the flowers. I was like, oh, I hope he eats them, but he didn't.
I thought he was going to lick the flower, but okay. All right.
But Neelix comes over again to comfort him and is very positive and just says, don't worry, you know, don't worry. Cause he still hasn't spoken yet.
Very calming and very encouraging on the part of Neelix all throughout this episode.
We go to the bridge next.
Yes, because Neelix says to the doctor, I'm going to take him on a tour of the ship. And this is maybe something that sights and sounds that might jog his memory a little bit. Yeah. So now we're on the bridge. Go ahead.
We go to the bridge. Neelix brings Tuvok in, and there's Harry over at Tuvok Station. Mm-hmm. There you are.
Yeah.
You would be engineer. I don't know. It just made no sense. Like, why are you at security or tactical?
Because Tuvok is down. I'm taking
his
spot. Yeah,
but wouldn't you be at your spot and they would just have someone in that department like that is more specialized for that?
Well, clearly I am so good at
you must be so good.
Yes, that I've been placed over there. Well, you know what? Harry is. He's not engineering. And that's a fallacy that a lot of fans think. He's actually the operations officer. Mm-hmm. And the communications officer. He's the only person in Star Trek history that has two chief jobs. Okay. So that's pretty impressive.
I did not know that.
But operations covers all departments. It's sort of like the manager of all. So he knows tactical as well.
Okay.
So, but you're right. The reasoning would be find somebody that is part of Tuvok security detail to take his place.
Yes. His lieutenant or whoever, his second in command. His
right hand person
that should be the person there.
Yes,
it would. But it was nice that you were there because he steps in and he's starting to like check out the buttons and he starts pushing some buttons.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Harry's like, whoa, no.
He activated the photon torpedo banks. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That's not good. So Neelix shuffles him out.
Yeah. It is of note that after he hits that button and, you know, Harry's a little like, whoa. But Neelix is still, I mean, he's like, everybody makes mistakes. Mm-hmm. We'll be back later. So again, really comforting and consoling him the mm-hmm. entire time. It's really good. All right. Now we're in Club Tuvok.
Club Tuvok, Tuvok's quarters. Neelix has shown him around. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that Tom Paris, Neelix says, Tom Paris calls this the Vulcan Vault.
Why do you think Tom Paris calls it the Vulcan Vault?
For a fact, Tom Paris calls it Club Tuvok.
I know that too.
So I don't know why Neelix has got this confused. It is Club
the Vulcan
Tuvok.
Vault.
Vulcan Vault is fine. Yeah.
That could be a nightclub name as well. Vulcan Vault. Are you going down to the Vulcan Vault? I am.
Next, so they're going to take a little look around Tuvok's quarters. We go to Astrometric. She's working with Narok. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to integrate this the scanning technology into our deflector array so that we can spot these ships. Mm-hmm. They say they're ready to the bridge. Janeway takes a seat and she says, okay, Seven, do it. And we go back to Seven and Narok. Seven activates it. We go out to space. There's a big shot from the ship. Our main sort of weapons, you know, part of the ship. This big shot comes out from the ship. We cut around behind Janeway to an angle of a view screen we don't often see. Again, Roxanne doing some, you know, doing some
fancy moves here, Roxanne. Yeah, just some
different stuff.
Yeah.
But it's a nice wide shot. And we do see on the view screen, we reveal that there is a ship that was cloaked.
Yeah.
And Janeway says, hail them. And Harry's response is,
which one?
Which one? There's practically a fleet out there, he says. And then we cut to space, and it's a super cool shot of all of these ghost ships.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
Everywhere, like, surrounding us.
Yeah, they really are. They almost look, because of the effect that we have once we shed light on them, they almost look like constellations in a way, you know, kind of floating constellations.
Yeah, okay. It was a very cool shot.
Yeah, but Kim does realize that they're charging weapons because Janeway does announce, she says, this is Captain Catherine Janeway, a Federation Starship Voyager. We intend you no harm. Kim notices that they're charging weapons. Janeway says shields, and we get hit. You say that they're scrambling, Captain, in all directions. Mm-hmm. And Janeway says, follow the lead vessel. So we take after the lead vessel.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
We do jump back to Tuvok's quarters, Club Tuvok. And Tuvok is now scared. He's so scared. He's frightened. He's under a table.
Down on the ground, hiding under a table.
Yeah, as if he's in Southern California waiting for an earthquake to happen. Yeah. He's under a table.
Neelix pops down there on the floor with him and says, you are safe with me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he comforts him. And I love that they got their hands in the shot. Both Neelix's hand goes
over. Talaxian hand. Yeah. Oh, you're talking about it. Just the fact that he held his hand, right? Just the support.
Yeah, it was very sweet in that tight shot with Tuvok in the foreground just freaking out, Neelix behind him on the ground, and their hands kind of on the table leg or something. It was just a nice, simple shot, but told a lot of story.
Yeah, we jump back to the bridge. They're still not responding to our hails. Paris is basically says that, you know, the Beneth ship is moving out of the deflector's range. So once it moves out of the deflector's range, we can't see them, right?
Yeah,
so
we've lost
possible. We need that dadgum cloaking frequency. And we need that, you know, they can't, we can't do anything.
Now we go back to Tuvok's quarters, and it seems like Neelix, this shaking is over. Neelix is reassuring him. He says, look, I told you we would be safe. I promised you.
Yeah.
And suddenly Tuvok speaks.
Yeah.
Yes, you did. His first words. Yes, you did. But he doesn't sound like Tuvok. He sounds like a little kid.
He does. He does. And Neelix, like the proud dad, I mean, he's very excited. He's like, what? What did I just do? Tuvok's like, you told me I wouldn't be hurt. And Neelix said, do you know who I am? You're Neelix. I'm safe with you. And again, the same delivery of a basically a very young boy, a very young Vulcan is what we hear from Tuvok. But again, it's very it's great to see that there is some progress, and I do believe a lot of it has to do with Neelix. I do.
We're in the ready room, and Narok is talking with Neelix, and I think Janeway's in there. And Narok is saying, "I need Tuvok to tell us everything." Basically, he wants wants information, wants this cloaking frequency.
Yeah, about the
attack.
Neelix says,
"Neelix says we cannot push him.
Yeah,
we've got to go slow. He's very emotional." And Neelix is very protective. And then Neelix goes and opens the door to the ready room. Yeah. And there's Tuvok
sitting
on the step.
Yeah.
Oh, so cute.
It was.
I don't know if that was scripted or if that was Roxanne or Tim. But I love that.
I love that.
He was just sitting there.
Yeah.
And he takes a seat by Janeway's desk. They're kind of gathered around and they ask him if he can remember the cloaking frequency. We have a push in, a nice, you know, foreshot that sort of keeps pushing into Tuvok. And
yeah.
And then there's a flashback. It's like a walking insert of this tricorder. His POV of the tricorder when this happened.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the ready room and he's trying to remember. And he has another flashback where he drops the tricorder. It's, you know, it's the moment that he got shot. And he starts to panic. Tuvok starts to panic. And Janeway says, that's enough. We got to stop this. And stops everything. And so they didn't get the information they wanted, but Janeway's makes an effort here. She's like, you know, maybe Tuvok, you and I could have lunch, just the two of us.
Yeah. And then Tuvok's like, I prefer to stay with Neelix and my babysitter.
Yeah. So cute.
It is.
Which is really interesting because, you know, Janeway and Tuvok are very close.
Yeah.
I like that they have a moment here, a real nice moment to, you know, acknowledge their relationship, that Janeway wanted to have some time with him, but we stay on our story because he doesn't go with her. He stays with Neelix.
Yeah.
Now we go to the mess hall.
Oh, yes. Now here's my big scene. So Kim gets to play Kowtow or reteach Kowtow to Tuvok, who taught Kim how to play Kowtow. So Kim starts going through the rules of how the game works. And Tuvok right off the bat says, I like the way it looks now.
I wrote that down too. He's got a big smile on his face. I like the way it looks now.
I don't want to play. And then as he starts to try to play, it doesn't go so well for him. The whole thing crumbles down and he's like, I don't like this game. Like a typical kid who's not happy with something.
I don't like this. Yeah, it's breaking. I can't play it. He gets frustrated and angry.
Yeah, and Kim does try to be, you know, more encouraging. He's like, well, you know, when you first taught me how to play, I wasn't very good either, but you kept encouraging me. And pretty soon I scored my first Kowtow. It just takes practice, that's all. And again, Neelix tries to encourage, try it again. You can do it. And Tuvok kind of gets a little upset. He's done.
He gets up. He kind of storms away.
Yeah.
We have a space flyby here. There were some cool space shots too, by the way,
in
this episode. Some different angles of the ship that I thought were cool. We go to sick bay and Tuvok says the doctor tells Neelix the doctor has helped him access his personnel file. And Neelix comments, I like your picture. It's a good picture of you. My picture is horrible.
Yeah.
I love
but,
that. Little...
But he starts reading. Tuvok starts reading through all of his accomplishments. He was an instructor at Starfleet Academy, 17 commendations for valor. He's a husband. He's a father. All these things. And again, Neelix's line, you're an extraordinary fellow, Tuvok. I mean, it's just very simple dialogue, but very effective dialogue all throughout here. And then Tuvok says, I was extraordinary. But, you know, and Neelix is like, well, you're still the same. And he says, well, then why don't I work on the bridge any longer? So it's sad as well, but it's still, again, all these lines, very short, very brief, but very efficient and to the point. And they all pull on your heartstrings all throughout this episode.
Well, it's just showing that, you know, he was this person, but he's not right now. He's not anymore.
Yeah.
And he, you know, part of the story is he may never be that person again, and kind of learning to accept what is instead of what was.
And I do feel like there are our listeners out there who have had similar experiences in life where loved ones have gone through some type of stroke or some type of hemorrhage, or where they survived and they were not the same person. So I'm sure this episode really hit home with a lot of our viewers and listeners as well.
But he does get really frustrated and emotional and starts kind of violently shoving Neelix, get away from me. And it's starting to get out of hand. The doctor comes in and says, you know, Mr. Neelix, you're going to have to leave. I'll take it from here. So it's not going well. We have another space flyby. We go to the mess hall. Neelix comes in and
it's just seven. Yeah. Looking out the window. Yeah.
And it's dark. It's late at night or something.
No one's there.
I love the dark mess hall look, by the way.
Yeah. Me too.
And she's pondering. I think Neelix says, oh, are you pondering?
Yeah.
He offers to help. She says, nah, you can't help. And he says, try me. She says, how do you find something that's invisible? So there's a little riddle here.
And Neelix is like, you mean the Beneth?
Yeah, she needs this cloaking frequency. And then he sort of sits down. I love the staging in this scene because it's very simple. But the way that he sits and then he gets up as he's talking about, when is a Vulcan not a Vulcan?
He gives a riddle to Seven.
To Seven and sort of puzzles this out by getting up and pacing. And I just thought the staging was really appropriate and kept the shot moving. It was really well done. Simple, but well done. He's puzzling out how to restore Tuvok to the old Tuvok. And Seven's advice, her response to the riddle is, you're going to have to adapt to the circumstances. Just like when she came on board and, you know, Janeway helped her to adapt to her new circumstances. She didn't try to make Seven into who she, restore her into who she had been as a Borg, but she, Janeway helped her discover who she could become and what she could become. And that sort of lands for Neelix. So we go back to sick bay. Neelix comes in. Tuvok is making a flower.
Yeah, he's sculpting one out of what wax material? Wax, I guess.
Maybe the candle wax or something.
Yeah, that's what I think it is.
And he's sculpting this flower as a gift for Neelix.
It's
his way of apologizing for getting angry. And Neelix apologizes for pushing him. And Neelix says it now that he's talked to Seven. He's like, you know what? Maybe he doesn't need to go back to who he was. Maybe he can be better than he was before. And he says, like making this flower, you never would have done that before. You would have called it a waste of time.
And Tuvok's like, this, it's not a good flower. It's no good. And Neelix's like, no, no, it's wonderful. It's creative. It's a symbol of our friendship. Before your accident, you never would have considered that my feelings might've been hurt. And you would have certainly never have made me a gift. So, I mean, these are huge behavioral changes on the part of Tuvok. And honestly, I think Neelix is absolutely touched by this. I mean, he can't, you know, this is in his wildest dreams, he would never have expected this type of emotion or this type of consideration from Tuvok. And I think he's bathing in it. And he loves it in a way, you know, deep down.
And Tuvok even asks him, were we friends before?
Yeah.
And Neelix says, well, you tolerated me.
We were colleagues and I certainly felt affection for you. And Tuvok's like, but I didn't return those feelings. And then that's what he says. You tolerated me. And he doesn't understand that. And then Neelix starts doing his impersonation of Tuvok. He said, you said things like,
Mr. Neelix, please contain your exuberance. And Mr. Neelix, I have no desire for fun. And you never smiled, and you've got a much better sense of humor now. And I love Tuvok going, I like to smile. And it is disconcerting to see that, because we are so used to six seasons worth of straight-edged Vulcan and to
the
see
whole different Tim Russ.
Tim Russ ear-to-ear smiles. It's just like, wow. And, you know, in real life, Tim does laugh and smile a lot. But as Tuvok, no, we don't see that. So it's a different side of him.
Yeah, totally different side. And Tuvok says in the scene, he says, I don't want to play Calto or meditate or work on logic problems anymore. Teach me what you like.
Yeah, he does. He wants to be Talaxian. He doesn't want to be Vulcan anymore, basically.
Yeah. So we cut to the mess hall.
Yeah.
And Neelix and Tuvok are bringing over for Harry and Kim, and Harry Kim and Tom Paris are sitting in the mess hall being served by Tuvok's new creations. He's bringing over a triple chocolate wiki fruit sundae with warm Fetron sauce. And Paris looks to Neelix. Fetron sauce on a sundae? And then they try it and it's delicious. It's an amazing idea that Tuvok had.
There was a phase in my life where I was really into trying the most bizarre toppings on the most, you know, things that you don't typically put them on, right? Just to see what I could come up with.
Did you ever go to the ice cream place, Farrell's Ice Cream?
Yes.
They were in malls usually. Yeah. When I was a kid, I would go to this place, Farrell's Ice Cream, and if it was your birthday, you could order this thing for your birthday party, all your friends.
Yeah.
It was called the Zoo.
And it was this massive, huge.
Yes. It was a massive bowl, like a punch bowl filled with every flavor of ice cream and every topping. And they called it the Zoo.
How many scoops do you think they put into the Zoo?
Oh, there must have been 50 scoops.
50 scoops of ice cream. Yeah.
It had everything on it. And they'd bring it over on like a stretcher almost.
Yeah.
Do you remember this? And they'd run through the whole restaurant with this big punch bowl of ice cream, and they'd run around with alarms going, and then they'd set it down and sing happy birthday. That's what this scene reminded me of. It reminded me of being at Farrell's and getting like the Zoo.
Is Farrell's still, it's gone, right?
I think it's gone.
Yeah.
I don't think it's there anymore.
You remember the Zoo? That's so.
But this is what the scene reminds me of, because they bring over a table filled with desserts that Tuvok has been making.
Oh yeah,
and then Janeway enters.
Yeah,
and they offer her up one of the desserts.
Yeah, Terra Nut Souffle.
And then she tastes it and she's like, "Oh!" And she falls onto you. Did you notice that?
She
collapses. She catches herself on your shoulder.
On me? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was very dramatic. I loved it.
I enjoy being the captain's crutch.
Catcher. Yes.
Catcher and crutch if needed.
And then she thinks it's delicious. And she follows Tuvok over to the counter where he goes back to work making these desserts. He's decorating cake now.
Yeah.
And she asks about the cloaking field.
Well, she says, do you remember anything more about what happened in the flyer? Mm-hmm, and he says, well, I detected a cloaking frequency. And Janeway goes, yeah, that's right. Can you describe it? And he's like, I don't know. And Janeway then throws out some technobabble. She says, did it have a symmetric modulation? Was the amplitude constant? And they, of course, I knew this is too much for Tuvok. He's like, I don't understand. And Tuvok then grabs an icing bag, and we don't see it because he's standing behind the counter, avoiding her question.
He's like, I don't know.
I'm just gonna go make some more dessert stuff, right?
And he's kind of struggling and getting frustrated as she questions him. Neelix comes over and says, you know, Captain, this is very difficult for him right now.
Yeah.
And then suddenly Tuvok pulls this cake out.
Puts it down. He goes, this is what I saw. On top of the cake, you see with the red icing,
the waveform.
It's a waveform, exactly.
Of the cloaking frequency. So he draws it out on the cake.
Yeah.
So we go to space. There's a captain's log supplemental that says the computer has analyzed Tuvok's diagram, and it's identified the Beneth cloaking frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Narrowed the search to a handful of systems.
Yeah.
So now we're getting close. We're getting warm. We go to the bridge.
And Kim announces, he goes, all right, Captain, a 9 million terawatt cloaking field in grid 216. Chakotay is like, 9 million terawatts?
That's huge.
Whatever they're hiding, it's like hiding a mall, basically, is what it is. It's massive. So Janeway's immediately, okay, alter course, Mr. Paris. And Paris gives us his traditional, yes, ma'am. And we head over to the 9 million terawatt cloaking field area.
Now, let me just say something about this bridge scene. So we just got the frequency on a cake. We go to the bridge 2 seconds later, and Harry's found it. 9 million terawatt cloaking field in grid 216.
Yeah.
Chakotay says that's huge. Janeway immediately says, let's alter course.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're there within seconds.
That's my point.
That's the only hole in this script.
Alter course.
Yeah.
Seven responds, deflector arrays ready.
Yeah.
Then Jimmy goes, shields. And
Paris shields.
We're within range.
What? Yeah.
We were right on top of them.
Yeah, pretty much.
Literally had to be right on top of them. And by the way, why am I at Harry's station?
You were.
Why am I at Harry's station? If she says alter course, I should be flying the ship down below.
You can.
I'm sure
you can transfer controls over. You can transfer navigational controls.
But you see what
over.
I'm saying.
I see what you're saying.
This is the thing where we're in the wrong place.
No, but anyway. It's not, because we have to pick up the slack for Tuvok not being there. That's it.
Well, I think also, I do remember shooting this scene vaguely, and I remember. Asking why, and I think I remember saying this to Roxanne, why am I up here?
Oh.
And she had a shot. And if you look at the scene, the shot starts with you over at your side, and then Janeway passes Seven.
Yes.
And then comes to me.
Yeah.
And she couldn't have done that shot if I was down front.
That's right.
And so
there you go.
I think it was just
maybe
for this
because
shot,
of that. Yeah.
Just so that it could keep going without cutting down to me down front. But I remember going, okay, I remember this going, I'm not sure I should be here, but if you guys want to say it's logical, sure.
Variety is the spice of life. And sitting down at con for the entire 7 years is kind of boring.
That's
so
fine.
As
far as like filmmaking side of things, sure, it's fine for me to be anywhere you want.
Okay.
But from a logic point of view, and the fact that it took about 3.2 seconds for us to find it and be there. That bit scene to me was it was a little, there was some holes. Let's just leave it at that.
So we have warp power and we have super warp power. And I'm clearly of the understanding that you use super warp to get us there within 3.2
seconds.
Well,
that's why I had to go up to your station, because super warp is only up there.
Only accessible from ops. You're right.
So that's now it all comes together.
That makes sense. Okay.
Sure.
So we're there.
We see this thing. So we're there. We cut out to space and we see this giant.
Yeah.
Array like a space station.
We have to, but we have to turn on the deflector right when we get there, and that's
we got
to
light
Seven
them up.
Does yeah, we light them
with
up
with our ghost hunter tools.
It's an armed outpost, 3,000 life signs, 22 ships. Janeway says, "Hail them." No response. Chakotay says they're charging weapons. Janeway says, "Open a channel." All subspace bands. They're firing, and they do fire. But then Janeway quickly says, "You know, cease firing immediately, or I will transmit the coordinates of this outpost to the Kasat. The Kasat will find out where you're at." And
I'll send it to the Kasat homeworld and they'll know where you're at.
Yeah.
And so it does stop.
Yeah. She then goes on and says, "Look, several days ago, a member of my crew was attacked by one of your species, badly injured. And the only way we can treat him is we need to know more about the weapon that was used." And they do respond. Kim says they're responding, audio only. We hear this sort of computerized voice almost, you know, and they're like, "We do not share technology." And Janeway says, "Look, you take it from others. Your attacker was downloading our tactical database when this incident occurred." And then they say that they have to assess potential threats. And Narok in the background is, you know, commenting on this whole thing. He's talking about how paranoid they are. And Janeway says, "Well, in exchange for this information about your weapon, we will provide you with tactical data on several of the species that we have recently encountered. And then you can assess their threats, you know, on your own time, basically, without affecting anybody
or injuring or incapacitating anybody else.
So she's negotiating, and basically they think about it, and then they're like, nope, you've got Narak on board.
Yeah, they think that he's, yeah, this guy.
Yeah, you can't be trusted.
He's a bad egg. Yeah.
Yeah, they start to charge weapons, and then Narak says, wait, wait, wait.
But
he offers them.
Yeah, but before he offers them that, when they say his name, that he can't be trusted, the way he responded was almost like a super excited ghost hunter. You know, he was
you
like,
know me?
You know about me? I mean, he was, yeah. It's almost as if he's a fan of the Baness, yes. You know, yes. this myth. He's looking for Bigfoot. And the fact that the Bigfoot
knows
tribe
about
knows who he is.
Oh, yeah.
It made his day.
He says he'll offer them the equipment that he used to detect their cloaking frequency or their cloak.
Right.
And then they can figure out how to defeat that so that people can't find them. Basically, the ghost hunter technology, he'll give it to them so that they can defend themselves.
Yeah.
And Janeway, you know, adds to that. She says, you know, take this or I'll tell the Kasat where you are.
Right.
Just a reminder. Right. So they agree.
They take the deal. It's a good deal. It's a really good deal.
We go to Tuvok's quarters next. He's Club listening Tuvok. To jazz. That's why it's Club Tuvok.
Yeah. You got to have some type of music, Club Tuvok.
He's sitting on the windowsill, just kind of jamming out to jazz. Neelix comes in. He's like, what's that?
Yeah.
And Tuvok responds, this is Tom Paris's jazz database.
Oh, look at that. Tom, you're everywhere.
It really swings.
It swings. Tom Paris, you really swing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's having a blast. He's listening to jazz. It. And then he tells Neelix he wants to go to the water park at Ryza on the holodeck.
The Pleasure Planet water park. I love that. I love it.
It's like he wants to go do the water slides. It's
like,
hey, Dad, can we go to the water water park today?
And Neelix is like, okay, son, but maybe after your doctor's appointment. And Tuvok's like, wait a minute, appointment? Neelix gives him the information that the doctor has analyzed the Baneth weapon now that we have all this information, and he has devised a procedure or AKA operation to treat you. Mm-hmm. And basically Neelix says, you should be proud of yourself. You know, if you hadn't drawn that picture on that cake, we never would have found this treatment. And that's when Tuvok quickly says, I wish I never drew that picture because he doesn't want to change. And it's so sad. And
Neelix is like, you'll be yourself again. And he goes, he doesn't want that.
Yeah. He doesn't want that.
Which is interesting, even in this moment. And it's, you know, it's referenced later ultimately in this episode, but you start to go, wow, he says, I am myself. And you kind of think, or I thought like, wow, I wonder if this was always in Tuvok, this kind of, it was always there. It's just, he didn't know how to express it, couldn't express it. But these kinds of emotions and feelings were always there. So it's an interesting, you know, it's different circumstances, as Seven said, he's had this, you know, injury, but it's still Tuvok. He is himself. He's not someone else. This is part of who he is.
Yeah, and
I really like that idea.
I do. And he pleads with Neelix. He says, but I just want to have fun and I want to have fun with you. And will I still be able to do that? And you know, Neelix says, well, you know, you won't call it fun. You will call it deriving satisfaction, but basically it's the same thing. I mean, you'll still experience emotions. And Tuvok says, but I won't express them. Neelix is like, no, you probably won't. And then that one line where Tuvok says, we'll still be friends. And Neelix is like, of course, even if I merely tolerate you. Oh, Neelix is like, I'd be lying if I told you that things between us will stay the same. And again, it's heartbreaking to watch this scene. I got choked up in this part.
I got choked up.
Definitely.
And Tuvok says, well, how will you know
how
much I enjoy being with you?
Yeah.
And this really lands in this got me. I was tearing up here.
Yeah.
And Neelix says, because you just told me.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's very, very good.
Tuvok says to him, why do I have to have this procedure? Why do I have to go back to who I was? And Neelix says, because this crew needs its tactical officer.
Right. On the bridge.
So these are tough choices because it's a fair question. Like, why do we have to change him back? Why couldn't this just be Tuvok now?
Yeah. And his button on that dialogue is after he says, because this crew needs its tactical officer, he says, and I wouldn't be a very good friend if I ignored that just so that you'd be nicer to me. So it's just like, oh God,
yes. This is a great scene.
Give me a tissue, please.
It's goodness. A great, great scene. Really we go good. To sick bay. The doctor welcomes Tuvok. He says, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
And Tuvok is there for the procedure. He turns to Neelix. He says, I'll see you after the procedure.
Yeah.
And Neelix says, of course. Mm. Tuvok goes over to the bed and Neelix says to the doctor, I'm going to miss him. And the doctor says, me too. Super sweet. Again, yeah. I was just like, oh.
And then, you know, then that shot where she's, it comes from above, right? Because he's another on the bio bed, another
crane really cool. Cable
ca- yeah.
Yeah.
I get another shot like that, which we don't normally see that angle very often. No. So again,
and it's good a tough job. To get that movement from the camera with the walls in the frame,
mm-hmm.
You know, the logistics of figuring out how to support the camera there is tricky, and they did it. It's a great shot.
Yeah.
We go to a space flyby again, back to the mess hall. Neelix is there and Neelix comes in and sees Tuvok and he says, Neelix says, hello, Commander. And it's old Tuvok. Mm-hmm. He's back to himself and Neelix is glad that things went well. Neelix says, maybe we should celebrate with some champagne.
Yeah.
And Tuvok's kind of dismissive. Tea will suffice.
Yeah. And, he's back to his old self he's again.
Back to his old self. Neelix tries, well, maybe we could just have some of your famous desserts.
Yeah.
And Tuvok's like, nope. Nutritionally deficient foods. No,
because Neelix kind of talks about he's preparing a special dinner for in honor of Tuvok. And that's when he asked whether or not he's willing to prepare one of the desserts. And yeah, he's back to old Tuvok.
He doesn't make desserts. It's nutritionally deficient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Neelix starts to go. It's the old Tuvok.
Yeah.
You know, we feel for Neelix here.
We do.
He's sad. He's kind of lost his friend. And he hears Tuvok say, Sundays. And that stops him. And Neelix says,
I beg your pardon?
Beg your pardon?
Yeah.
And Tuvok's like, your riddle. It occurs to me that he could also have eaten the Sundays.
Oh my God, Neelix, that's a very clever answer, Mr. Vulcan, but it's not very logical, is it? And Tuvok admits it isn't. No.
Yes, and he's kind
not.
Of,
it's awesome.
Kind of thinking it's resonating. It's
it is.
For Tuvok, you know that again, that Tuvok we saw during this episode isn't someone else. It's him. It's just deep in there.
Yeah.
It's part of who he is, and Neelix knows it. So I amazing.
Good job, Tim Russ. Great job, Ethan Phillips. Good job, Robert Doherty. Good job, Andre Bormanis. Yeah. Good job, Roxanne Dawson. So all across the board, everyone pulled their weight. Everyone knocked it out of the park. So we're really, really, really happy to
have
seen this episode. And honestly, you don't remember much of this when you started watching this.
No.
I was sitting there going, what the? What is this? It took me a while to kind of have memories of, until that Kalto scene, that's when I realized, I do kind of remember that scene. But up until then, I was a little
curious. I remember being at the wrong console. That's all I remember.
Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's your lesson for this?
There's a lot of lessons in
there.
There are so many good things, but I guess the simplest lesson for me is it's a reminder that all of us has more inside of us that's not always easy for other people to see.
Mm.
There was more inside of Tuvok. We got a chance to see it in this circumstance, but it's not someone else. It's part of who Tuvok is. And that was the lesson to me.
Yeah, I think for me, it's more about a lesson about companionship, about being there for somebody, because, you know, when somebody's comatose, the thought process is, well, there's not much that can be done, but just the physical presence of another human being that is giving compassion or care, empathy for the person that is comatose, being there for them. So Neelix being there for Tuvok, it made all the difference in the world.
How important it is to be there for your friends, for people even that we care about.
Yes, even if you're not even saying anything, even if you're just sitting next to somebody, being there as support, and that person knows that you're there, that means everything.
Yeah. So agreed.
Yeah.
My rating for this, I would almost give this a perfect score, a 10 out of 10.
Jeez. But
there were some people at the wrong consoles.
I would say my console was the right console that you were at. How dare you call it the wrong console?
Tuvok was flying the Delta Flyer. I was standing at operations. There was a lot of...
You know what? You're right, Robbie. It should not have been called Riddles. It should have been called The Wrong Console. Should have been the name of this episode.
So with that in mind, I cannot give this a 10 out of 10, but I will give it a 9.8 out of 10.
Oh my gosh.
9.8.
It's
one of my highest ratings of all
six seasons so far. I'm gonna play devil's advocate, and I'm gonna say that it's going to skew lower than that just because. So I'm giving this one an 8.5 is where what I'm gonna give it.
Okay.
Let's see what we have.
See, and you give your answers. You're trying to game out, like, what is the average? And you're trying to get close to that. Whereas I'm just giving mine. I don't care.
I want to nail it.
Could be a 2. I'm still going to give it a 9.8.
And that's your prerogative? Hey, you're allowed to do that. Okay.
All right. Our Captain Admiral's average rating for Riddles is 8.1.
Oh, I was going to go down to 8.2, but I thought you'd get mad at me. So I gave it a little bit more. So I was so close.
9.8 for me. I stand by my 9.8. It's a really good episode.
Good for you.
There we have it.
All right, everyone. Thank you for joining Robbie and I on our recap and discussion of this episode. And join us next week when Robbie and I recap and discuss the episode Dragon's Teeth. You're the dragon, so this might be a good episode this is for gonna you to be, watch. Yeah, this is all about your teeth, basically.
Okay, great.
Okay. All right. See you next week. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.